are tuned to Juno Afternoon here on KTUO and KRNN FM in Juno for Tuesday, the May 12th, the year 2015. Filling in for Scott Byrne today, I'm Jeff Brown. Today we'll get a preview of Wednesday night program Mud Rooms with Tim Miles and Tom Cosgrove. We'll get an update on Perseverance Theater's current production of Seven Homeless Mammoths Wander New England. We'll visit with Cinnamon Simpson and some young actors from the upcoming Montessori Borealis production of Canterbury Tales. We'll also profile the music of jazz and classics performers Windsink. And we'll learn about a community scavenger hunt with organizer Megan Bullers. At Writer's Almanac, music and more today on a Juno afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, partly cloudy skies with low temperatures 40 to 46 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, sunny weather with high temperatures around 64 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Yupik fishermen who were cited for fishing during a closure on the Kuskokwim River will not appeal their case to the Alaska Supreme Court. KYUK's Daisha Eaton has more.
The Alaska Court of Appeals affirmed a lower court's decision in March. An attorney with the Anchorage-based law firm, the Northern Justice Project, James Davis, who represented the fishermen, says they decided not to appeal for several reasons. First, he said they didn't think there was a very good chance of the Supreme Court acting to protect Native subsistence rights, based on his interpretation of the court's history. Secondly, the Court of Appeals acknowledged that Native subsistence rights had a spiritual component, said Davis, and might be deserving of protections under the religious protections of the Constitution, and they didn't want the Supreme Court to invalidate the idea. Davis adds that the new governor wants to build bridges to the Native community and is interested in partnering with tribes. In 2012, dozens of Yupik Alaska Native fishermen were charged with violating the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's emergency orders when they fished for king salmon on the Kuskokwim River. 13 defendants appealed. The defendants argued their fishing was a religious activity and that they were entitled to a religious exemption under the Free Exercise Clause of the Alaska Constitution. The Court of Appeals said the health of the diminished king salmon run outweighed the fishermen's individual rights. Davis says the better forum to challenge the state's undermining of Native subsistence is in federal court, but says they're not pursuing a federal case now. Davis adds that even though the Yupik fishermen didn't prevail in court, they accomplished what they set out to do, which is to make the state acknowledge the critical importance of Native subsistence rights and their connection to Yupik spirituality. In Bethel, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Native Americans living away from their reservation can now apply for business loans through a community development financial institution on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. As Jim Kent reports, Lakota Funds has doubled the geographic area it serves in order to provide financial investment opportunities to the many tribal members living away from home.
Lakota Funds has disbursed more than 900 loans totaling $7.2 million since it was founded in 1986. That financial distribution has created 1,400 jobs and nearly 500 businesses on or near the Pine Ridge Reservation. Executive Director Tawny Brunch hopes expanding Lakota Fund's service area from 25 to 50 miles from the reservation's boundaries will provide substantial opportunities for Native entrepreneurs in distant locations.
We've for years been taking calls from people in Rapid City who want to utilize our services, also from Rosebud and Mission, and we're happy to have them participate in our classes. You know, we teach financial literacy and the business planning and stuff, but we weren't able to assist them with their business lending needs, and so now we will be able to do that.
Lakota Funds offers loans for up to $300,000 to either establish a new business or expand a current one. Applicants don't have to be Oglala, but they do need to be a member of a federally recognized tribe. Tawny Brunch notes that Lakota Funds offers all the tools necessary for tribal members to not only build their businesses, but to also build their assets. And that's the best way, says Brunch, to help Native communities become self-sufficient. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Two Native Americans are among a group of former foster care youth being honored by the White House. Daryl Conquering Bear Crow and Eric Swiftwater, both Oglala Lakota, will be recognized next week with 10 others as champions of change for making a difference in their communities. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau and Karen and FM in Juneau. Our first two guests are Tom Cosgrove and Tim Miles here to talk about tomorrow night's Mudrooms event.
Thank yes, you Jeff.
Thanks for coming
yeah,
down.
Yeah, good afternoon,
yeah,
Jeff.
It's, it was hard to come inside on this sunny day.
I was just going to tell the listeners that we were outside.
Oh, yeah, no, yes, that's right. We're outside enjoying the sun. Can you hear the wind?
The mudrooms, for people who do not know what mudrooms is, can you give your...
Can I give my, like, 30-second what is? Okay.
Your elevator speech.
All right, elevator speech. Mudrooms, it's real stories, real people, real stories. 7 people, 7 minutes, 7 stories. We pick a theme. 7 people from the community volunteer to stand up and share a story loosely based on the theme, and they have 7 minutes in which to do it. This is now our... Fourth season. Thank you for correcting me. Fourth season, and tomorrow night is the last night of the fourth season.
Tim, what makes it so magical for you?
It's just, you know, I've always liked telling stories. You know, I'm just impromptu type things, and it's such a great venue. My first time ever standing up was last year, this time last year, actually. And to go into that venue... and all these people, and it's so supportive, and it's just an incredible experience. Because I'd never done anything other than, like I said, impromptu, but to actually have something prepared and to tell a story, and then people being there and being very supportive about it. It was an awesome, incredible experience.
Now it is last Mudrooms of the season.
It is.
Are there 7 performers or 8?
There are 7 performers, though there may be a surprise. Who knows what you'll get on the last day of the season?
For the non-surprises, let me know who's telling.
The people that know. Actually, Tim Miles, who you just heard from, is one of our tellers. We've also got Todd Mace, Tracy Goldsmith, Zach Wilkinson, Jordan Watson, Travis Smith, and Aaron Cook. But we haven't talked about the theme, Jeff, which is really the most important part.
I'm not sure if you could say that on the radio.
Oh, I think we can. We're going to push the limits. It's poop, parasites, and pests. Now, I want you to know that the people that sit on the mudroom board go into a room and duke it out about next year's the themes for the for an entire season. And when this came up, I was like, you've got to be kidding. No way. Well, it got on the list, and it was the first of all of our topics to fill up. So people want to talk about this subject, including Tim.
Tim, have you got a good story?
I do. Yeah, I am. One of my experiences have been with elephants, and I took care of 7. So I'll let you go with where that goes.
And I bet you it's not about parasites.
No, it's not.
So it should be exciting. Tom, what makes it magical for you as a teller?
Well, I think Tim hit it. There is this sense of it's a low-risk situation. You are in front of a good crowd. We get anywhere from 100 to 225 people on an evening, and it's at Northern Light United Church at 400 West 11th Street at 7 p.m. But what is it special about me? It's that it's a great environment. It's supportive, and they're real stories. It's kind of like when you start telling a story that actually happened to you, that's important to you, and you have people that are listening and connecting with that. You can feel it in the audience, and you can feel it as the storyteller. It kind of creates a magic moment. So here's my whole wrap on this. I firmly believe that we as Homo sapiens, storytelling is a part of who we are. It's part of our DNA. It's how we learned for millennia through the oral word. And so we have gotten away from that a little bit in our current society, and people find out that they want this and need this, and it's kind of magical. And these events are happening all over Alaska and the U.S. So this is definitely like we plugged into something. Don't know exactly what, but it's pretty magic.
It costs $7 to get in.
It does cost seven, another seven.
And that money goes to a good cause.
It does. We actually select causes. This year's causes, the first half of the season was AWARE, and now the money is going to SAIL. And everything, all proceeds. I tell people that Mudrooms is an organization. We've got nothing. All the money that is given at the door immediately pays off our expenses for that night, and all the rest goes to charity. So it's a pretty good deal for everyone around.
People might have missed it. Could you give the authorized version of the tellers?
The authorized version? Oh, the tellers again. Yes, I'm going to have Tim read those.
Oh, great. Well, we've got myself, Timothy Miles. We've got Todd Mace, Tracy Goldsmith, Zach Wilkinson, Jordan Watson, Travis Smith, and Aaron Cook.
And who's doing music?
Oh, gosh, that's right. We got great music coming up, and that is with Travis. Oh, of course, you give me a word that I can't pronounce.
Croteau, I guess.
Yeah. Is that French?
Croteau,
I think so.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's going to be great. It's always a lot of fun.
Yeah, even on a sunny evening.
7 o'clock.
7 p.m., Northern Light United Church.
Anything you want to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
I don't think so. Other than that, if you haven't tried it, you can always catch us on K2OO.
On the fourth Thursday of the month at 7 o'clock.
That's correct.
Tim and Tom, thank you for coming down.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 12th of May, 2015. It's the birthday of the poet and artist Edward Lear, born in London, 1812, who went on to give us all of those wonderful limericks and The Owl and the Pussycat and more. He was the 20th of 21 children, about half of whom died in infancy. He himself suffered from epilepsy and fits of deep depression, which he called the morbids. He started selling his drawings when he was just 16. He found employment as a sign painter, then an illustrator. He was hired by the London Zoological Society to produce a series of bird paintings, then hired by Edward Stanley, the Earl of Derby, to document the animals in the Lord's private zoo, where Edward Lear met the Earl's grandchildren and began writing poetry for them, including The Owl and the Pussycat. It's the birthday of Florence Nightingale, born in Florence, Italy, to a wealthy English family in 1820. Over her parents' objection, she decided that she wanted to be a nurse. Nursing was a working-class job at the time, and her parents were horrified. But she went to school, and during the Crimean War, she went off to Turkey to take care of English soldiers. Conditions in the field hospitals were appalling, and she began a campaign to reform them. But she thought mistakenly that the high death rates were due to poor nutrition, and it wasn't until after the war that she realized that sanitation was the problem. She went on after the war to fight for hospital reform and the education of nurses, and became one of the most famous women in Great Britain. Founded a school of nursing in 1860, but she suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder, and after the war she became an invalid herself. Here's a poem for today by Greg Watson entitled Tornado. Just beyond the hem of the lake's blue skirt, the sky turned suddenly jaundiced. A weighted stillness, not quite your own, descended, and even the black pine and birch hovered motionless in a calm that bore no calmness at all. And for what must have been the briefest of moments, you gazed, a child of seven, transfixed on the sinewy black thread of the storm, its form swaying tearing the fabric of the horizon, throwing bits of cloud and gravel dust as dogs and kids scurried into the small white cabins, which suddenly looked as though they were made to be thrown all along, something stolen from the set of someone else's epic. And years later, you would not remember how it was you were pulled indoors or whose arm it was that lifted you with the force of a blow, bringing you to safety, nor how the storm at once lifted like a needle from a phonograph above the roofs of trees, still trembling, and when you looked out again, it was through brown sheets of mud slapped across the windows, the dark fragrance of earthworms seeping through the slats, beyond which the world shone as green and peaceful as it ever would again. A poem by Greg Watson, Tornado, from All the World at Once, published by Noden Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
KTOO programming is made possible in part by Juneau's own Alaska Pure Mountain Spring Water, available in Juneau stores or delivered in 5-gallon jugs to homes and offices. 780-4262.
It's about 17 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Juneau Afternoon here on KTOO and KRNN. Our next guest in the studio is Rebecca George. She's in the play Seven Homeless Mammoths Wandering New England at Perseverance Theater this time of year. Rebecca, thank you very much for coming down the station.
Thank you.
So, for the people who haven't heard of June Afternoon or haven't been to the play, could you describe what the play is all about?
Sure. It's about many things. It revolves around kind of a multi-generational love triangle. My character is a dean of a college, and she's facing several things going on in her life at this time. Her ex-lover has just moved back in the house who's dealing with with cancer. She has a younger lover living there, and the college that she is the dean of, the trustees of the college have decided to shut down this small natural history museum, which is causing a huge uproar in the town. It's a small northeastern college, so there's lots of fun, quirky town characters that have lots of things to say about the closing down of the museum. And then there's also a diorama characters that are kind of the voices of all the college students that come through the museum.
And it's a comedy.
Yes, it's very funny and fresh and also very touching. There's many layers and levels to it, but mostly it's pretty funny.
You've played this play for several weeks now. How's it changed?
It's been really interesting to see how the different audiences receive it. There's so many different levels of comedy going on in this. There's very lowbrow, very highbrow, lots of witty dialogue, but also some great one-liners and some very physical comedy. So the laughs come in just different spots every night, depending on who's out in the audience. So it's a real great exchange between, you know, the cast and the audience, more so than any play I've been in. You just feed off of the different energies, and the laughs are coming at all different places. It's such a well-written script that, you know, there's laughter throughout, but just they pop up in different places depending on who's in the audience and who gets tickled by what. So that's been really fun to witness and be a part of.
Do you ever do any improvisational, like, experimental?
I have, and that is hard. I like a script, and this script by Madeline George is really a great script. Improv is just really hard. With a play like this, you know, the most you improvise is when you're feeding off of the audience and what they're giving you, and, you know, you can kind of tell what kind of crowd you have that night, if they're going for the lowbrow or the highbrow, and then you kind of play that up.
How do you keep it fresh?
just by, you know, being there every night, being present and realizing that, you know, there is different responses and different energies coming in from the audience. It really is an exchange, I feel, between actor and audience. And so just to be present and aware of that and feed off of that and play with that and then play with the castmates. And it's just a fantastic cast, so it's really easy to keep fresh. Everyone keeps bringing new fun things. Within the parameters that we've already set, but you know, there's little surprises all the time. They're great, great actors.
How many people are in the cast?
There's six of us. There's several really talented Junoites. Katie Jensen, who works with Theater in the Rough. Mike Peterson, who's been doing theater in town, I think, for quite a while. And then a couple youth college students. Patty Kalbrenner and Brian Crowder, and then a guest artist in from L.A., Sylvia Kwan, and myself.
Sounds fun. What's the run of the play?
The run goes through May 24th. It runs Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30, and Sundays at 4. And then the final weekend, there's a Wednesday performance as well. So May 20th, you could come see it Wednesday night at 7:30.
Rebecca George, thank you very much for coming down to the station. Is there anything you'd like to add that I might have forgotten to ask?
Just come see it. It's not something you'll see very often. It's a really unique, fun play, very clever, very touching, and I think it brings a lot to the Juno audience, and I think they'll really appreciate it. So even if it's beautiful outside, just come inside for a couple hours.
Thanks, Rebecca.
Yeah, thank you.
Of Marin, Molly Lewis and Marion Caldwell will be performing Geek Girls in Concert Wednesday, May 20th at 7:30 at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. It's a $10 admission charge. It's supposed to be a fun and educational concert brought to you by Alaska Robotics. In the studio with me now is Megan Bullers and Rob Malazzi. Thank you very much for coming down to the station to talk about the community scavenger hunt coming on this Saturday.
Yeah, thank you.
Can you please describe what it's all about, please?
Basically, it's a walk for health and wellness, and the idea is to just get everybody out there to see what the community has to offer. And there's a variety of businesses, and you just drop by each one of them from 11 to 3 on Saturday, and you'll receive a little card where you get your stamps, and then from there, you'll be entered to win some grand prizes. So you're looking at grand prizes such as Dr. Lee, he's throwing in a grand prize of a $200 toothbrush, electric toothbrush, and then he's throwing in 4 free cleanings. So that includes your x-rays, exams, and cleanings. And then Songs is throwing in a $50 gift card. And Pilates is throwing in a $100 10-session gift card. I wish I could have that one. And Gold's Gym is throwing in about 5 30-day sessions. And so all you have to do is come to each one of these locations, get your stamp, and there'll be food, there'll be games, lots to offer that day from 11 to 3, and it's that simple.
How'd you get the idea?
Just came up with it, Kimberly and I, at the hair salon. We were talking about it a little bit, and so I just ran with it, and Rob here helped me with a lot of it, too.
How many businesses are taking part?
We have 7 businesses. So we have Kimberly's Hair Salon, Gold's Gym, Dr. Jared Lee, Copa, Song Sushi Bar, Ruben Willis, and then Pilates Bodies. And we have a little map for you that you can grab on the card, and you'll see that they're all within walking distance. You can walk from one to the next and drop them off whenever you have your cards full. And at the end of the day, I'll run by and grab them, and then you'll be entered to win the prizes.
How do you know where to start?
You can start anywhere.
You have a Facebook page? Tell more about it.
Facebook page is Juno Walk for Health and Wellness, and it's a scavenger hunt. That's what we're calling it. It's pretty fun. Just look up that on Facebook, and you should be able to find us.
Anything like that, Rob?
No, sounds great, and very excited, very excited.
All right, thank you very much for coming down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Birdna. Listen to one of nature's most skilled carpenters at work. A woodpecker, a northern flicker, is carving out a nest cavity. Clinging halfway up an old dead tree, the bird uses its chisel-like bill to chip out a round entrance hole 3 inches across. The flicker then excavates a cavity a foot or more deep inside the trunk, a safe haven for raising its young. Chances are the flickers will use this cavity for just one nesting season. But that cavity may have a prolonged career as a home for small owls, bluebirds, swallows, and other birds, including one very special duck. In the boreal forest of northern North America, the small black and white duck named the bufflehead nests almost exclusively in old flicker cavities. A number of other ducks also incubate their eggs in tree cavities, but buffleheads are the only ones small enough to use the cavities of flickers. Yet clear-cutting in some northern forests has reduced nesting habitat for flickers and buffleheads alike. Both benefit when consumers choose paper products made from recycled paper. Today's show brought to you by the Lufkin Family Foundation. Learn more at our website, birdnote.org.
About 28 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guests are here from the Montessori Borealis School, here to talk about the Canterbury Tales. They're going to be performing them this weekend. Thank you, everybody, for coming down to the station today. let them know you're out there.
Hello.
Can you please say your name and what role are you playing?
My name is Peter Sidmore, and I'm playing Chanticleer.
My name's Quinn Gentile, and I'm playing Harry Bailey.
My name's Bridget Braley, and I'm a teacher at Montessori. I'm actually a long-term substitute here.
My name is Nicole Mannix, and I'm playing Thief 2 in the Canterbury Tales.
My name is Sasha Pico, and I'm playing the Parson and the Queen in the Canterbury Tales.
Who wants to tell me about the Canterbury Tales themselves?
The Canterbury Tales is written by Geoffrey Chaucer and is a medieval, or not medieval, it's a literary work that is very popular and very
funny when made into a parody.
And there's over 20 stories. How did you pick out which ones you wanted to tell, and how many stories are you telling?
We're telling 11 stories, and we picked them not ourselves, but we used a script that we got.
What about the size of the cast?
The cast is our whole class, and it's 38 people. And we had to double some roles, but we pulled it off.
It's being performed on Saturday?
Thursday and Friday.
Thursday and Friday?
At 7.
And where is the performance?
Marie Drake School downtown.
In the gym.
What I like to do when we interview a lot of people about a play is have them say the name and the role they play and your favorite line in the play delivered as you would in a play. So if it's soft, deliver it soft. If it's loud, go ahead and be loud and proud.
Okay. My favorite line is our host, Harry Bailey, is screaming at our sign changer, and he says, maybe you should see if you can find a photo lab. So if you can figure out if you can develop a personality.
My favorite line is probably also Harry Bailey talking to the sign changer, getting mad at the sign changer, and saying, there is never a large bird of prey when you need one, because he's walking across the stage so slow.
Yeah, Harry Bailey's got a lot of good lines. Mine is also his line, and it's, don't worry about UFOs. No one would want to abduct you anyway.
My favorite line is, when I say Harry Bailey, it's, they tried a brain transplant, but his body rejected it.
How do you talk about UFOs? No, Chaucer didn't write about UFOs in his time. Did you update the script?
Yeah, the parody that we had, it was already updated to be extremely funny and hilarious and make fun of his work.
Tell me what you learned about being an actor.
What I really learned was that you really need to know what the scene's about and how you need to act, like whether you need to be angry, calm, quiet, or still, so that you can put the scene to its full potential.
Acting is very fun if once you do it, but there's a lot of build-up, and it's taken a lot of time and effort from everybody, but yeah, it's coming together nicely.
One really amazing thing about this show is that all the students are, they're part of backstage groups, and they do the whole set, they do all the costumes, they really work hard, they do all the technical, they really just put on this whole production on their own. So as a teacher, it's really wonderful to watch these students just thrive in this environment and just really take ownership of the play, which is what I've enjoyed.
I also really liked how we got to do our own costumes and the set and props and everything. And also how some parts we don't have to go exactly by the script. We can kind of use our own, what we think is good in the play.
I think as something that I've learned is that it really takes the entire group to put on the production, and I've really enjoyed the experience of working with my classmates to put on the production.
All right, and perform is it Thursday and Friday night at what time?
7.
And it's in the Murray Drake building?
In the gym.
Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask.
Tickets are $10 at the door. You can buy them beforehand for $7. Just ask a Montessori student or teacher.
And also, this money that we're raising is for our class trip at the end of the year.
Where are you going?
We're going to Sitka.
That was cool. Thanks again for coming by.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Setting sun, once more I behold your light, waiting for the night to come. I close. saw you last, my oh my, where I've been. I have seen too much too fast. How I long to hold your hands in mine, far away from here and the past.
Comes from Alaska Canopy, now accepting applications for the 2015 summer season. More information at alaskacanopy.com. Are you considering homeschooling your student? Then consider Homebridge, a program that builds the link between school and home. Homebridge allows up to 2 classes at local schools with no allotment reduction and makes sports, theater, and other activities possible within the Juneau School District. For more information, call 523-1821 or find us under Homebridge on the Juneau School District website.
It's about 20 minutes before the hour, and you are tuned to listener-supported Juneau Afternoon. In the studio with me now are members of the group WindSync. They're doing some workshops tonight, and they're performing part of the Jazz and Classic Festival on Wednesday evening. Thank you for coming down to the station, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Could you please tell me the names of the group members and what instrument they play?
Sure. Well, my name is Tracy Jacobson. I'm the bassoonist in the group.
I'm Ani Hochalter. I play French horn.
My name is Garrett Hudson. I'm the flutist with the group.
And Aaron Tsai is our oboe player, and Jack Marquardt on clarinet.
Tell me about how the name got selected and how the group formed.
Well, we decided that we wanted an alternative career in playing chamber music, and so we were looking outside of the realm of classical, standard classical group names. So we came upon, the well-known, at least for our time, boy band, NSYNC. And we decided that because we were 5 musicians and they were 5, that we would kind of borrow from that. And a little play on that is WindSync.
How did you meet?
We met when we were students at Rice University in Houston, Texas.
What are some notable composers that have composed for woodwind instruments that you'll be performing?
Sure. Well, lots of notable composers wrote one piece for wind quintet. But one of the things that we're really inspired by is to go through the whole repertoire, including orchestral pieces and arias for singer and piano, and these types of pieces, and to arrange them for ourselves. So we're not limited by just the wind repertoire. So on Wednesday's concert, we'll be playing the music of Maurice Ravel. We'll be playing the music of George Gershwin. We'll be playing the music of Ottorino Respighi. Lots of different composers, not just ones that wrote for wind quintet.
How do you find a piece that says wind think ran on all over it?
Well, that's an excellent question. And actually, we don't really find ourselves limited to what we think the wind quintet will be capable of. We actually take a lot of chances on the repertoire that we experiment with. And that's actually kind of the beauty of the creative process that we come up with as a group, is that even though it's not easy to actually conceptualize a wind quintet playing a specific piece, we're not afraid to try it. And one of the pieces we're playing tomorrow, Ravel's Bolero, which of course incorporates the snare drum, was a huge obstacle for us, but we incorporate it quite successfully. We all alternate taking the snare drum part and moving around the stage and picking up different instruments. So that's our process.
And you noted for playing by memory. What does that allow the group to do?
The really fantastic thing about playing from memory, which we didn't even really realize the full potential until we started playing programs entirely from memory, is that we're able to communicate directly with each other and to actually look out into the audience during our performance and see the response to our music. And it's a really fantastic feeling. It's pretty corny. You know, another word for memorizing music is to play by heart. And it really, when you memorize a piece of music, it goes to a deeper place and it creates an entirely new understanding for us of the music.
It's also kind of interesting to think about that when we're in a place like Juno. I would much rather be performing with these guys and playing music, staring out at the scenery than looking into a music stand. That's where I'm drawing my inspiration from, not necessarily from ink printed on a page.
Does it allow you to be more dramatic in your performances?
Absolutely. I feel like all of our senses are heightened when you're taking away just the visual component of staring at music. So we're all listening more and engaging with each other more, and just physically we're a lot more animated, I think.
Do you do any dramatic motions or anything to move around a lot?
Well, Garrett's our flutist, so the flute sometimes functions also as a baton, so he's quite dramatic in movement sometimes.
I tend to flail sometimes, it's true.
Is there any room for improvisation?
You know, a lot of what we do requires a lot of creativity in terms of the arranging. And so before the performance, we'll go in and create our own arrangements. And then in performance, there's small elements of ornamentation, of kind of playing with the music and being a little bit experimental. But we're not necessarily strictly improvising.
Can you tell me a little bit about the Play Different project?
Play Different project was a kind of a residency we did in elementary schools where we allowed fifth graders to kind of experiment with their ideas of what it meant to be unique and what the word tolerance meant, and to write poetry and then to put that to music with us. And we felt like a woodwind quintet was a really interesting vehicle for them to explore the spectrum of that, because each of us are so different within the ensemble. So that metaphor kind of carried through and allowed them to build a greater understanding of how they are different and why that is valuable.
Can you tell me a little bit more about arranging a piece for your group?
Well, I mean, it's a very interesting process because each of us sounds so different. And actually, Jack, our clarinetist, is the main arranger. Do we know much about his process?
Well, when we're working on an arrangement, basically we'll go through and decide together as a group which pieces of music we're very inspired by. And then Jack will sit down with a recording and a score and put into music notation software five parts. And those five parts he draws on from all of the various different parts to create, I guess, kind of a smushed together version, or sometimes an expanded version if there aren't five parts. And from there, we sit together in a room, basically with a big Sharpie and trading around some sections and messing with what we have on the page until it's something that feels very organic to us. And then once we've come up with that version, then as we continue to perform it, it actually will continue to evolve for us. If you listen to a recording that we play of Dvorak's American String Quartet from a year ago and the recording from tomorrow night, they will sound extraordinarily different. We, in each performance, make small changes that we don't even realize just because we're not glued to the music and we're making all of these decisions that we really just feel in the moment.
What do you have in mind for the workshop tonight?
Well, we're really looking forward to seeing all the people that are going to come out. We've actually already run into so many enthusiastic wind players in the community, and we're looking forward to hearing them and hopefully being able to offer some pearls of wisdom.
Tonight's going to be very interesting because it's all kind of just on condition of who shows up to the class and what everybody who is present wants to kind of explore and discuss and contribute to the class. So we can't even predict necessarily what's going to be a part of it. We would certainly like to play a little bit for everyone who's there, and then hopefully people will step forward and we'll have some great conversations about you know, creating music and practicing our instruments and all of that. So we're excited. We're looking forward to it.
And if people need more information on that, they can go to jazzandclassics.org. Tomorrow night, you're performing. What's on the bill?
Well, we've already alluded to some of it, but we are basically playing a program of many of our own arrangements. And that'll include Otterina Respighi. It's an incredible arrangement of the Adoration of the Magi in the Botticelli triptych. And as Garrett mentioned, Ravel's Bolero is maybe the centerpiece of the program. We'll also be doing some music of Aaron Copland, Leonard Bernstein, and Antonin Dvorak, just to name a few. But it's a really interesting program, one that we've actually taken on tour for the last about 7 months. We left in September, and this is our very last concert.
The Play Different project, I'd like to go back to that. Can you do any success stories?
Yeah, I mean, every school we go into, we actually usually feel very successful. We always feel very successful. We actually ended up selecting three of the poems, and those created the anthem for the school. So the school walked away with this really beautiful piece of music that was actually for them. And I hope that they can touch base with that occasionally and remind themselves of all of the things that the kids learned and explored. So, yes, very successful. We actually had a horn player that at one school that was so moved, he went to our concerts at the school. We did more than one, and he went to each one. His teachers allowed him to get out of class, and so that was really moving for me.
There's also a really great ripple effect with us going into schools and particularly with the Play Different project, because we really focus on the, you know, the older kids and then kind of ask of them once we depart to kind of go down to the lower grade and to teach them what it was that we brought in and so on and so forth. So our goal there is to reach everybody as much as we can with this really powerful concept.
You've been playing a number of years and performed, I hesitate to say, around the world. But are the audiences any different where you perform?
You know, I don't know that anyone's ever asked us that.
I'm going to say yes, but
yes.
I don't know why my answer is yes.
I think that audiences are very different, although it's often just a feeling, I guess.
I'm actually going to jump in. We ended up going to about 70 cities across North America this season, and some of those were very, very small communities who rarely had any access, if any, to classical music. And they were very outspoken about not necessarily thinking that they would enjoy the classical music program that was being brought into their community, but left feeling completely different than when they initially walked in. And then you go to some communities who have such a strong, arts community and just regular access to the arts and to classical music. So in that regard, I do think that audiences can differ to the exposure that they have.
Anything you'd like to add?
I think that was a great answer. You know, the thing is, after most of these performances, we stay around and meet the audience and talk to them. And the individuals are often, you know, so different from each other. And we probably could not pin an individual based on, you know, the type of conversation to a specific place. But maybe as a general concept, I think it is very different, as Garrett said, to have this wonderful positive feedback from audiences that don't usually listen to classical music, as well as the feedback from audience members that do listen to classical music. And it's a very different sort of feeling to play for those different audiences.
Do you think the ability to do theatrics on stage helps people gravitate more towards the music?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
A bassoon doesn't seem to be a first instrument for a lot of people. Was it bassoon your first instrument?
It was not my first instrument. I began the bassoon when I was in eighth grade. Before that, I played the saxophone.
The flute, is that your first instrument?
Yes, it was. I grew up in a somewhat musical family. My mother used to sing and play the guitar all the time, but the flute was the first instrument I actually got into my hands, and I really do say this all the time, that I think I probably would have still found a path towards music regardless of what instrument I actually got my hands on, but it just so happened to be the flute.
Was your current instrument your instrument of choice initially?
I'm going to say yes. I did have a three-month stint on the trumpet, but I was so young, and I can't really say I was much of a player when I switched, so I'm going to go with yes. French horn was what I began on.
I did not tell you this, but my first instrument was a French horn as well.
Oh.
Brilliant.
Should we get together and jam?
Yes. Sure.
All right, thank you very much for coming down to the station and talking about Winsink's performance workshops tonight and performance tomorrow night. You can get more information by going to jazzandclassics.org. Thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jazz and Classics presents local violin virtuoso Paul Rosenthal and pianist Victor Asuncion in recital with Franck's A Major Sonata, Schumann's Carnival, and opera transcriptions by Franz Liszt. Stunning music, stunning talent. Thursday, May 14th, 7 p.m. at Chapel by the Lake. Jazzandclassics.org for more information and tickets.
Weather forecast for tonight, mostly clear skies with low temperatures around 40 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, sunny weather with high temperatures around 67 degrees. Thursday, more sunny weather with high temperatures around 66 degrees. The forecast for Friday through Saturday, mostly clear skies with high temperatures around 67 degrees.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.